Hi, good afternoon. It's Rob. Who's on, please?
Hey, Rob. It's Sean. Rob.
Welcome.
Tara's here.
Hi.
Claudia's just popped out. Maria's here as well.
The whole gang.
We're all here.
Okay. So how is everyone doing? I apologize for being a little bit minutes late, but I just got an introduction to a scheduler or a calculator that kind of turns the way I, you know, way I've been thinking about increasing revenues for a long time. It's very interesting, and I'll introduce it to you guys when we. It's really in its beta test. Curtis Brown brought. Because he's been working with some teams, and he's been frustrated because it's been very difficult to get them to understand the process of increasing revenues over time other than just thinking about more new accounts. This calculator kind of makes you think in terms of average assets per account and average revenues per account as being really what you're after. And that mentally, when you think, okay, we're not going to have any more clients ever. This is it, the max we're ever going to have. So we have to think in terms of, so our goals become quite different. And obviously you can increase your revenues in a couple different ways, right? You can do more business with an existing account. You can charge the account more. Or you can bring in larger relationships and eliminate smaller ones. So it's really three ways that we increase our business from now on, rather than thinking in terms of just getting larger. And I teach this, but I had a little trouble negotiating this thought process because I was stuck on how many new relationships do we have to bring in. And Curtis kept saying, Rob, it doesn't matter. The point is our goal is to raise our average assets and our average revenues. I said, you're right. It doesn't matter. What matters is raising our average assets and our average revenues to the number that we need to achieve. So we need to bring in as many accounts as we need to bring in. It could be one. It could be 20. It could be 10. And it just means we have to get rid of 10 or 1 or 20. So it's an interesting, just a different way of approaching the business. Not to digress, but it was kind of cool. And I'll show you that. I'll introduce that to you guys as soon as it's beyond we're really still in the construction stage. But it actually worked beautifully. I didn't see anything wrong with it. So I might be able to bring it to you as soon as maybe next week. Because I want to try it out on some people, frankly.
Great.
So, anyway, how was the week?
It was good. I'm going to bring something up, Rob, that I think is important for us to go through, and hopefully you can help here. You know, from what you asked us to do last week was to have a discussion with our manager and walk through exactly what we're doing. Which we have, and that conversation went very well with the immediate management team here locally. We took it a step further and had a more broader conversation with a couple of additional layers and levels of managers, and that didn't go so well in terms of what our thought process was as to where we want to take the practice. We had sat down, Claudia and Tara had done a really good job of putting together a specific presentation that we laid out at a dinner. went through the fact that we were, you know, again, revamping our service model to incorporate the 1242. Additionally, put in the fact that we are, you know, one of just a handful of advisors on the East Coast which have been selected to operate with discretion in individual client portfolios. And more importantly, you know, the additional resources of capital that we've spent here, you know, again, we've told you about, you know, adding in a Bloomberg machine, engaging more clients in looking at individual equities, which from conversations that we've had with clients has really done, I think, a really fantastic job of bringing them more in line with the process, the frequency of conversations, and then just, you know, more in tune to the how and the why a portfolio is constructed. The feedback that we got from the, you know, couple layers above our immediate manager were, you know, we think where you're failing is not engaging in planning in other areas of the bank, that if you were to engage there, business would really ratchet up, you know, somewhat dissuading us from the notion of transitioning portfolios, which we've already done over the course of the last year, to individual equities. Even the comment, if you didn't hear Rob, was, what are we going back to the 1980s and you guys are going to be stock jockeys again? So that was a little disheartening because we, you know, mentally, I think us collectively as a team, I think we're heading in the absolute right direction. Rob and I just had a conversation here with one of the other managers in our office and said even though our production is down, you know, year over year, we feel, you know, the most organized that we've been, I think, in, you know, 4 years. And the direction and the feedback we're getting from clients has been fantastic with this new service model. So I don't know if you have any takeaways or any comments from the reaction that we got from a couple layers up in management, or if you've had any experience there where you have not got positive feedback from this.
Well, let me tell you something. I was always an innovator, right, and a creative guy. And two things. Let me just say that most private banking teams, whether they're Bessemer Trust or their, you know, Merrill Lynch or their, you know, Citigroup or whoever it is that's working with ultra-high net worth clients, almost to a team, they have a money management arm where they manage some of the money. They have an analyst on the team, and they do portfolio construction, stock selection, and portfolio management. And I'll tell you where that is a huge help. It's a big help when you get ultra-high net worth clients with concentrated stock positions who are CEOs of companies, and they want to have somebody there that understands stocks. And they understand portfolio management. Some of them run stock option plans against the positions and, you know, other things which aren't, you know, rocket science anymore. I mean, anybody can do it. But they tend to do it. That leads them to hedge funds and private equity and, you know, fairly sophisticated investment processes, the diversification, looking, you know, more like Harvard or Yale or something like that. So that's one thing. Every firm has got a vision of what it's going to take for them to transition to the next level or to the next wave of, you know, the future. What does the future look like? What does our typical financial advisor look like that's in that future? And then how do I get our average guy to look like that model? So this is what they're dealing with. And they all kind of agree to that, and then they all work to make that happen. Definitely, I do agree with them in the world of financial planning. And I agree that, and we've discussed this, that I think you need to be a self-sufficient financial planning firm. as much as humanly possible so that you can discuss what a charitable manger trust is, a grant, what is a family foundation, how do you build it, and then you make the appropriate connections to the estate planner and you monitor that and go with him and, you know, you're building their future together. So I agree with the financial planning part of it. I understand why they don't want a bunch of people going out and starting to manage portfolios because it's less efficient than hiring somebody to do it. The reality is, you know, many money managers just have really underperformed. And the question is, just be sure to hold yourselves accountable so that you're not just doing it for the sexiness of it, but you actually have a very well thought out process and investment strategy that, at least in your mind, works. What they don't want is a bunch of guys going off in all different directions and trying to reinvent, you know, modern portfolio theory. So, do I understand it? Yes. And by the way, anytime you're introducing something that is new or slightly off the grid, you're going to get pushback. Do you know when I first introduced Supernova, my team, I was sick, and my team took it to a national meeting to introduce it. And do you know what they did? They made fun of my team. They laughed at them. And they said, this isn't Supernova, this is Chevy Nova, you know. And it was embarrassing. It was retarded, you know. It was sad. They just had no clue as to the future and how it was going to unfold and where Supernova was right in the center of it. So when I hear people pushing back on innovation, oftentimes I say, hey, we're probably on the right track if they're pushing back.
And Rob, with respect to the planning, because, again, we wholeheartedly agree with that notion, management's level is that we need to include the other planners which exist within the Wells Fargo Wealth Model, which effectively is a pay-to-play type of environment where, you know, again, we're charging a wrap fee for, you know, the asset management portion as well as doing the planning aspect on our end. But they want to engage on, you know, additional lines of business and sources of revenue. And typically when a client engages these planners, there's an additional fee of anywhere from 10 to, what is it, Rob?
You know, 100,000
plans. Which to us, we're having, you know, a difficult time wrapping our hands around, you know, is that fee really warranted? And if you're a client and you're saying, well, what have you guys been doing on the planning aspect all along? So I think where our practice is that we're trying to align, as you've given us the guidance, in terms of making ourselves specialists and bringing in folks in the insurance space, in the trust and estates group. So we've made those connections. But as you deal with some of the other teams in J.P. Morgan, Citi, and the other likes, are they also charging those additional ancillary fees to do the more in-depth plans?
It depends. It depends. If somebody comes in with, you know, $120 million in assets, yes, okay? If it's $10 million, maybe. It depends on the team. But I think I've expressed myself clearly that I want, based on, you know, just my experience, I want you guys to be the experts. And the more they can rely on you as the experts, the more credibility you have. If there are things that you're uncomfortable with, then you hire that, hire those things out until you're comfortable.
Yep. Okay.
Okay?
Good. that's helpful.
Is it a source of revenues for you? It could be if that's where you want to go. But I see it as not the source. You know, it like I said, it depends. It depends on your ability to leverage your team and where you are. Okay, so great. Congratulations, by the way. 1 in 100 will actually do what you just did. Actually go and present yourselves to management. I don't know why not, why they don't, but they don't. And they won't present themselves to the centers of influence in a formal way either. And I think that has...
We've done that with 5 or 6 as well.
Now, how did that go?
Fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
That was a great idea. Yeah.
Let me make sure I'm recording this just a sec.